Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Medical Monday, November 29th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, now accepting applications for a wide range of job and career opportunities at the hospital and outpatient offices across the greater Saratoga region. SaratogaHospital.org/careers. Joining us today is Dr. Katie Adams, Chief of Palliative Medicine at St. Peter's Hospital. Dr. Adams' team helps patients and their families manage the symptoms and stress of serious illness, including cancer. If you want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Palliative care, and we will meet Dr. Katie Adams right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here on this Medical Monday to discuss palliative care is Dr. Katie Adams. Dr. Adams is Chief of Palliative Medicine at St. Peter's Hospital. For the past 5 years, Dr. Adams has led a multidisciplinary team at St. Peter's, helping patients and their families manage the symptoms and stress of serious illness. She has a special interest in caring for patients with cancer and is a past chair of the Cancer Special Interest Group of the American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Medicine. Dr. Adams is a graduate of the Yale Palliative Medicine Fellowship. If you want to be a part of the conversation, call early, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Katie Adams, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me and giving me this opportunity to talk about what palliative care is and what we do, because I think it's an area where there's a lot of misunderstanding.
There certainly is. And those of us who thankfully may not have had a relative who has been seriously ill may know nothing about it. So tell us what your team does on a regular basis.
Absolutely. So we really treat the whole person and even beyond the person, the patient and their support system, whether it's family or friends. So we take a look at a person from both their physical symptoms or suffering, their psychological, their spiritual issues. And that's why we utilize a multidisciplinary team to do this approach. And we look at patients that have any type of a serious illness. So that could be cancer, but it could also be dementia, heart failure. And by starting to ideally get involved in their care at the point where they first get diagnosed with that illness, we can address all of the symptoms that come along with that and really be a navigator throughout this journey that they have with their serious illness.
It's something I've only seen once from a distance, and it's amazing. Now, this palliative care that my relative had was in home. My relative was no longer really able to go out, and it made a vast difference. And I truly believe it extended her life.
And there's been studies that at least palliative care, at the very least, doesn't shorten life. And that was one of the biggest concerns initially, is if there's the team of people really giving you honest information about your illness, you know, is that going to lead people to choose end of life care or hospice care prematurely? But it really doesn't shorten life. It really provides this extra layer of support, this support system and guide for you and your family along this journey.
We're joined today by Dr. Katie Adams of St. Peter's Health Partners, and you put them in a sentence together, hospice and palliative care. There is a clear and distinct difference that maybe seems a little like gray area to many of us who haven't been there.
Absolutely. And thank you for pointing that out. So I see palliative as kind of the navigator and really hospice as the destination. It's really a separate service for patients who really just want to focus on comfort, who don't have aggressive treatment options, who don't want to go back to the hospital. And that's really a wonderful, extensive service that can be provided in the home.
Dr. Katie Adams is with us. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And Dr. Adams, you'll see me looking at my phone. I'm listening to you, but I'm also monitoring the email coming into the show. And so that just want to get that out there now. Once again, the number here is 800-348-2551. You said you had 15 people on your team,
right,
at St. Peter's? And you mentioned multidisciplinary. And one of the things that caught my ear was spiritual. And how do you assess the needs of a patient's spirituality?
Right. So we have chaplains associated with our teams that do a spiritual screening to really understand what is the patient's sense of spirituality. Is it religious, or is it more questioning about what is the meaning of life? And sometimes when people are approaching a serious illness or possibly facing nearing the end of their life, those questions become more important and more difficult to address. And we really rely on the chaplains on our team to help address those existential issues.
Do you happen to know what the meaning of life is?
If I did, I don't know that I could share it.
Oh, I see. Need to know basis. Number here is 800-348-2551. Palliative care doesn't necessarily mean pain-killing drugs, but can it mean that?
So we are trained, the clinicians on our team are trained in two important techniques. One is communication, and that's really a dedicated system of learning. And then the other is symptom management. And that's why a lot of our work does focus on cancer patients, because unfortunately, they can have severe pain and other symptoms, both from the illness and from the treatments associated with that disease. And so we are experienced with using higher doses of medication, which may be necessary to control those symptoms so that patients can go through their treatments.
Has the philosophy changed over the years that you've been doing this?
I think it's expanded. I think palliative care really grew out of hospice and wanting people to be able to have that multidisciplinary approach earlier in their illness. And I think over time what's happened is we've just been able to provide that service to patients earlier and earlier in their disease.
You know, we were in the green room having just a brief chat, and I was grumpy as usual, but you said you wanted to talk about advanced care planning and how it's perfect for a holiday get together. And I said, "Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun." But it's important.
It's extremely important. And our focus is on patients that have a serious illness. But honestly, it really is for everyone, because we know accidents can happen. And when you are sent to the hospital, either after an accident or a serious illness, there might need to be decisions made about your care. And as the medical team, we're going to need to look to someone to make those decisions if you can't make those decisions for yourself.
But to be clear, palliative care doesn't necessarily mean you're going to die, right?
It is for someone with a life-limiting illness. So it means that they have an illness that eventually will lead to death, but hopefully not for years to come if we get involved early enough.
We're joined today by Dr. Katie Adams of St. Peter's Health Partners. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's grab a call or two before the first break. Susie in Brattleboro. Susie, you're on.
Hi. I'm not sure how to ask this, but I'm an older person, and at a certain point, if I had a serious illness, I would not want to go on. And, you know, I would probably stop eating and drinking. And I wondered if your team ever comes and helps with that.
So I think part of what you're asking about is physician aid in dying, which is not legal in New York State. But I think whenever we're faced with someone with serious illness that's looking to reach the end of their life more quickly, you know, what our team really asks is, why is that? What is the suffering that you're facing that is just so unbearable? And maybe we can do something to address those types of suffering that you're facing to allow you to live your life more comfortably.
Susie.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Katie Adams of St. Peter's Health Partners. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Medical Monday. We're joined today by Dr. Katie Adams of St. Peter's Health Partners. Dr. Adams is the Chief of Palliative Medicine at St. Peter's, and it's good to have her on the program. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We go to Woodstock, New York. Nick, you're on.
Oh, all right. Great.
Great. Go ahead.
Hey, Ray?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, I'm on. Great. Wow, I did not expect to be the first person. Okay.
Oh, you weren't. You weren't. But go ahead.
Okay, so my mom has been a holistic person her whole life. She's in her late 70s. She has chronic cellulitis. She went to the hospital two Fridays ago. Now she's in rehab. They want her to stay, but she wants to leave, even though she's not really able to. And they all basically, with the new variant too, this is a side note, but with the new variant too, is, you know, stay or go. What do you tell families in this situation? What do you tell the patient? And I'll stop right now.
Good question, Nick. Thank you.
All right.
So this is just one example of many of the difficult decisions that we face in the healthcare system that can be, you know, related to the type of treatments that are available or issues of safety. And I think that's why communication is so important with the rest of the team there, understanding what are the risks of leaving, what are the benefits. Does mom really understand all those risks and benefits? And working with a team there, hopefully, to help make the right decision for her.
Nick.
Yep. Yeah, I'm here. And also, you know, it's very complicated with family things on this. And her name's Donna, by the way. I'm sure a lot of people here know her. But they basically said they're going to possibly lock the doors and go back to wherever it was before all this.
Huh. I mean, this is a specific case, Nick, and I'm not sure Dr. Adams can do much over the phone here. But do you want to comment further, Katie?
Gotcha.
I think that would
be great if that's possible.
I think I would look to maybe a social worker or a case manager in the facility to really help open up this conversation and make sure that you and mom have all the relevant information to make the best decision for her based on her values and goals.
Nick, thanks a lot for the call. That's a great question, though. If somebody doesn't want palliative care, but you think they really need palliative care, how do you make that case to the patient?
Well, I think people are often worried about what it's going to look like. But when we just sit down and start talking to people, I think it's less intimidating and less scary than what people expect. You know, when people go on a journey, a lot of us like to have a navigator, kind of a travel guide to tell us what to expect and how to get there. And some people don't. They like to kind of figure it out themselves, and that's okay. But I think the journey can be more comfortable and more predictable and more enjoyable and for the patient and the family, really, if they do have that navigator with them.
We're joined today by Dr. Katie Adams of St. Peter's Health Partners. The number is 800-348-2551. Sarah in Hinsdale, Massachusetts. Sarah, you're on.
Hi. I wanted to reinforce something that you said regarding making sure the conversation happens sooner rather than later. I have been so appreciative of the kind of care that you're involved with. Both of my parents have been through hospice and palliative care, more with my father, with new marriages and intergenerational, you know, changes. The conversation has to be made. And I just want the listeners to don't feel uncomfortable talking about it, because when it comes right down to it, it has to be decided. And everyone grieves and goes through this very differently. So I guess I just want to reinforce what you said. Just make the conversation, you know, as not charged, but have it and make sure it's done correctly. That's what I wanted to say.
You want to comment on that, Dr. Adams?
Thank you so much, Sarah. I completely agree with you. I think it's important to know that this is not one conversation. It's really a process because conditions change, values change. We have a guide to advanced care planning that we have on the St. Peter's Health Partner Advanced Care Planning website to really go through the steps of this process. It's really, you know, first, it's taking a moment to think about your values and what's important to you, and then figuring out who in your circle is the best to carry out those values, and naming that person as your healthcare proxy and really communicating to them what's important to you and how you would want them to make a decision if that time came.
Yeah, and to reinforce, too, that you're only benefiting those who will help you along by making these choices when you're you know, lucid and able to make those choices. Because when things get tough, things get really tough, and it's confusing and emotions, and it doesn't have to be scary. As you said, there are people who can guide you. So I just wanted to thank you for all the work that you're doing, and I've benefited from that type of work greatly.
Sarah, thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Dr. Katie Adams joins us. This email from Mark, and it dovetails a bit with what I was talking to you about regarding spiritual support. And Mark's question, there are so many different religions in the world. Christianity alone has thousands of denominations. With such diversity, how does palliative care address the spiritual needs of different types of people when beliefs are so different?
Absolutely. And that's why we rely on trained chaplains who are trained to really address people no matter their spiritual or religious belief. So we do an assessment of what their spiritual or religious needs might be, make sure that they're connected with their faith communities if they need to be, for instance, while they're in the hospital, but really kind of meet people where they are.
In my experience in life, and it's, you know, I'm a radio guy, there's not that much experience, but when you're young, you have that phase where you think, you never even think I'm going to die. Anything's going to happen to me. In your experience, do people embrace spirituality as they get closer to the next stage?
I think it can happen for some, not for everyone, but for people who are starting to question, you know, what happens after I die, or why did this happen to me? Those can be really important spiritual or religious questions, depending on what background somebody comes from.
There's a tough question to answer. Why did this happen to me?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Dr. Katie Adams joins us, St. Peter's Health Partners. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
How does respite care fit into the palliative care system?
So, Jim, tell me a little bit more about what you mean by respite care.
Well, just caring for the family.
So there is, you know, there's two parts to this. And palliative care is really helping to understand what type of care a patient wants. Do they want to really focus on living as long as possible to focus on treatment, or do they want to focus more on comfort? Are they somewhere in between? But another important part of this is who's going to be doing that care. And that's not really the focus of our work, but it definitely has an important interplay. Because are they, you know, does somebody want to be at home, but they don't have family or friends that can physically help them and give them the physical care they need? Those are really important issues that, unfortunately, we can't solve, but we are faced with every day.
Jim.
That's okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And our guest today is Dr. Katie Adams of St. Peter's Health Partners. Let's go to Steve in Schenectady. Steve.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
You bet.
Actually, my question dovetails nicely with the last caller, because you mentioned, Doctor, you mentioned that sometimes people don't have people at home that can care for them. And I was kind of wanted to know what your interaction with St. Peter's has interacting with, like, comfort care homes, specifically in this area. There's the Joan Nicole Prince Home in Scotia, or Mary's Haven up in Saratoga. Do you have any interaction with them?
So those homes are a wonderful asset to our community that interact more with the hospice team, because patients who are residing in those homes would be on the hospice program. But I think they're a wonderful resource to help solve some of that problem, like you said, we talked about who is caring for these patients who are so sick.
Right. But you don't have any direct interaction with those centers or anything like that?
Like I said, the hospice team, if we were referring someone to hospice, they would be caring and supervising the care of the patients in those homes. So we might be involved with a patient transitioning to that home, but we, as a palliative care team, don't supervise the care there.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Let's talk about that transition for a minute. Mm-hmm. When you defined for me what the palliative care entails, you said this is for people who are heading to that next phase, whatever that next phase may be. At what point do you say, okay, we've done as much as we can do, it's time for hospice?
It depends on the type of illness somebody has, what their treatment options are, and what their goals are. Some of kind of the main decisions that go into making that transition is hospice and comfort care is really appropriate for people who don't want to come back to the hospital. And for some people, coming back to the hospital can be a revolving door associated with the later stages of their disease. And that's why it's important for us as a palliative care team to make sure that patients are fully informed about their illness. For instance, I saw a patient with end-stage heart failure who said, "Why am I still here in the hospital after a week trying to get this fluid off of me?" Which is part of the reason to go into the hospital. And nobody had really explained to her in a understandable and down-to-earth way that is kind of what happens with the later stages of illness, is that the heart is weaker and it's harder to get fluid off, and it results in longer and more frequent hospitalizations. And she said, "Well, if this is what my life looks like, I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to go home with hospice."
Is that your job to tell the patient that? Who dropped the ball on that?
I think what we do is we have extra time and extra skills in communication to make sure that message is communicated clearly, because it often is communicated, but there's so much information that's being thrown at the patient about what medications they should be on, what their treatment options are, that an understanding about what their illness is going to look like going forward, that's really a long conversation that's really important to have. And that's where we can get involved to really dig into the nitty gritty of that and make sure a patient's questions are answered about what's in store.
You know, you'd mentioned, one of our callers may have mentioned dementia. And it occurs to me that there are those cases of older people, and maybe not even that old, who get dementia, and there really isn't somebody to make those decisions. How do you explain it to the patient who really probably doesn't understand?
And that's exactly why it's important to have these conversations early. You know, maybe mom's getting a little bit forgetful, and maybe you're getting together for these holidays. You know, starting this conversation when people are able to have it is really the best bet, as another caller put it, because later you're unfortunately going to have to guess what mom would have wanted. So to sit down and be as clear as possible about what her wishes would be if things got worse is really a gift to the family.
Dr. Katie Adams of St. Peter's Health Partners joins us today on Medical Monday. Dr. Adams is Chief of Palliative Medicine at St. Peter's Hospital. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. This email from Diane. It's a two-parter. If someone is on hospice, one, will they be able to keep their private physician?
Okay. So when somebody is on hospice, they have two physicians involved. One is a medical director associated with the hospice itself, and another is a provider or physician that the patient has already had involved in their care. Obviously, that provider has to be willing and able, but they are able to keep one of their providers as part of their care on the hospice program, and that's a really wonderful part of this program as well.
You know, the second part, it's insurance related. I have no idea what I'm about to read. And if you have no idea what I read, that we'll just move on. Part two of Diane's question. Can someone on hospice continue their routine medications that are important to them but different than what their admission is for, understanding it is medical condition specific? If so, do you know if their insurance, Medicare, might cover this medication, for example, Synthroid, stool softener, or would these be out of pocket? And I think this may be not what you do, but go for it.
So those of us who are trained in palliative medicine, we go through a fellowship program that trains us in hospice and palliative medicine. So that's the reason I can answer this question, is I have some training as a hospice medical director. These medication plans are really individualized to the patient. And so hospice benefit is meant to cover things that are related to the illness that will provide symptom relief. And if a patient has other conditions that are unrelated, they might be covered by a different part of Medicare. But really, this is all individualized to the patient. So it's something to discuss with a hospice medical director. If you have a loved one thinking of going on the program, what medications would they be able to continue and what they might not be able to?
But dealing with insurance is not what you want to be doing as a doctor, right?
No, absolutely not. But we're fortunate that Medicare does cover the hospice program for patients, and that a lot of what is offered is designed about that, around that Medicare benefit. So the fact that it is offered to all the Medicare beneficiaries is a wonderful benefit.
This email is from Michelle. Can you please address what it looks like when you go into a care facility, palliative care, when you have no significant others looking after you? So we talked about this just now. You said some people like to have a navigator. I'm one of those. So what does that look like? For instance, in my situation, my husband's much older. We don't have children, although I have a sister and nieces and nephews. Plus, of course, there are good friends. Yet everyone lives all over the world. Who will really be there for me when it gets to, you know, later stages in life is unknown. Assuming there are funds available to move into a general care / palliative care facility, how does it work if you are your own health and financial caretaker? And that is from Michelle.
Wow, Michelle, that is a lot of parts to that question.
Yeah, are you happy you are you happy you came to the show?
So I think I can answer this in a few parts. You know, first is, how do you access palliative care? And I think if you're hospitalized, many hospitals do have a palliative care service. So I would ask if there's a palliative care team in your facility that you could access to help navigate you through your illness. Resources outside of the hospital are more limited. You can certainly ask your primary care doctor or specialist if there's a palliative care team available to you. And then, you know, planning for the unknown is a two-part process. There's the medical piece, that you want to make sure that there's somebody there that can carry out your medical wishes. And you have the power now to find out who that, to make sure that that person is who you want it to be by filling out a healthcare proxy form. There's also obviously some financial planning that is reasonable when you have a serious illness, but that's really separate from the medical planning.
The healthcare proxy form, if it was a perfect world in Dr. Katie Adams' view, does everybody fill that out as soon as they're an adult?
Absolutely. There's really no reason not to have one. It doesn't have to be completed by a lawyer, so it doesn't cost any money. It just requires two witnesses. It lays out who you would want to make decisions for you, who can be calm and cool in an emergency situation, who knows you best. And then on there, you can write any particular wishes you have. But really, the most important is naming that person who's going to speak for you when you can't speak for yourself.
Now, do these issues, the money, the care, the personalities involved, do they affect your patients in what you do in delivering palliative care? Is that a thorn in your side?
As far as who's caring for the patient?
In other words, does it ratchet up the stress level and make your job of delivering successfully palliative care to your patients, it's tougher? There's a stress level there, is there not?
I think that's where the social issues come into play, is certainly people are living through this serious illness, but they're not living in a vacuum. They're living in the setting of, maybe they've had another loved one die recently. Maybe they're moving. Maybe they have other family stressors. And that's really where we rely on our social workers to help understand those stressors, to help the patients deal with any family conflict as best as possible. Because like I said, these issues aren't happening in a vacuum.
Dr. Katie Adams from St. Peter's Health Partners joins us today. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go back to the phones before our next break. Susan in Schenectady. Susan, you're on.
Yes. Hi. I just have a perspective on, at all costs, emphasizing home care and whatever adequate, comprehensive palliative care can be provided in the home. Ideally overseen by a relative or friend of the patient's choice. Our institutions do a very good job, but we all know how inadequate their funding is. And once you are in an institution for long-term care, it is difficult to get out. I have had several acquaintances and friends pass away at St. Peter's Hospice, and it has been a very, very positive experience. But I see that as the absolute last resort. At home, I believe, this is my view, is best. And I'm a clinical social worker. I've had experience with this with a family member. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks, Dr. Adams,
WMC.
Would you like? Thank you. Would you like to comment, Dr. Adams?
Yeah, thanks, Susan. So I think understanding where somebody wants to end their life and how they want to do it is exactly one of the issues that we'd like somebody to talk about with their healthcare proxy. A lot of people do want to die at home when we take surveys, and not many people are able to ultimately meet that goal. Some of that has to depend on what resources are available to care for somebody at home. Some depends on a patient knowing how close the end of their disease process is and what exactly that's going to look like. So certainly being able to care for people in their homes as much as we can is an advantage, and something that we try to do. A number of palliative care programs, including our own, has started to meet people in their homes to try to help patients meet this goal.
Dr. Katie Adams joins us on this edition of Medical Monday. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop, it's Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number, and Dr. Katie Adams of St. Peter's Health Partners joins us today. Before we get back to the phones for the home stretch here, Dr. Adams, let's talk a little bit about advanced care planning. You talked about the health care proxy. Are there other intricacies that we should know about?
Yeah, there's kind of a plethora of paperwork that people can get lost in. Certainly the healthcare proxy is the most common. Then there's a term, you know, power of attorney that can be a healthcare power of attorney or a financial power of attorney, and making sure that people are aware that those are two separate things. One is who's in charge of your healthcare decisions, and one's who's in charge of your financial decisions. Often people complete a living will with their lawyer when they're doing a healthcare proxy. And unfortunately, it's not a document that I, as a palliative care provider, find very useful. They tend to use vague language about people being in an irreversible condition or permanently unconscious, and doesn't really provide a lot of guidance to the medical team. So if there's certain things that people know they want or they don't want, like a ventilator or feeding tubes, that really has to be translated into a medical order. Doctors can't follow a living will, and that's something that somebody should discuss carefully with their provider.
And that is nothing. In other words, there can't be a DNR checkbox on a healthcare proxy form?
No, that's really a guide for the healthcare proxy to use when talking to the medical team.
Dr. Katie Adams joins us today on Vox Pop. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Diane in Pittsfield. Diane, you're on.
Hi. I don't have a question. I just wanted to say that I've been through the hospice at home experience with my husband. Hospice people, the nurses, the social workers, nurses' aides, are, in my opinion, saints walking the earth. They helped this difficult time, 3 weeks at home. They helped my husband, they helped me, and they helped me after he died. And I think that, again, as Dr. Adams has said, the most important thing is communication before you get too sick to be able to make decisions. And I just want to say thank you to all palliative and hospice care people out there. Thank you.
Diane, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Diane, so much for sharing your story. And I think we all appreciate being able to be part of stories like yours and provide some relief in your time of need with dealing with a loved one with serious illness. I think you point out another important piece, which is that these services are not just for the patients, but these patients have caregivers who are taking care of them, who are doing their best to, you know, manage what's going on in their own lives and take care of their sick loved one. And they often need support as well. And so the palliative and hospice teams are really there for the caregivers as well. And as you mentioned, for hospice, that support to the caregivers goes on even after the patient has ended their life.
We're joined today by Dr. Katie Adams of St. Peter's Health Partners, and our number is 800-348-2551. Joanna's in South Hadley. Joanna, you're on.
Hi, thanks. I have one follow-up comment to make and one question. The follow-up comment, being a CNA and having worked a lot in hospice work, is that the medical order, if someone wanted to use a search engine and put in M-O-L-S-T or P-O-L-S-T, that will bring them to information about medical orders for life-sustaining treatment, physician orders for life-sustaining treatment, where specific choices can be made about dialysis, ventilation, et cetera. That's my comment. Just a little more detail there. Second is the question about supply chain shortages. 4 years ago, I ran into a situation in hospice care where there was a shortage of Dilaudid, which is an important drug that can be used in hospice. And it made it much more challenging for that particular person. Are you seeing any supply chain shortages in pain medications or other supplies for hospice and palliative care?
Well, Joanna, certainly an issue that a lot of us are dealing with in all aspects of our daily life is supply issues. I personally haven't run into any of these issues in the patients I'm taking care of. Fortunately, there are a lot of different types of pain medicines nowadays, and palliative and hospice clinicians are trained in kind of switching from one type of pain medicine to another. So I'm hoping that if we do have a shortage of one particular type, we'll be able to convert that to another so that we continue to provide relief of pain and suffering to these patients.
Joanna, thanks for the call. Is there a philosophical tenet whereby you try to avoid painkilling drugs if possible?
Well, in the early stage of illness, the use of painkilling drugs really depends on the patient's goals. Somebody might tell me, listen, I'm going to try to avoid pain medications as much as possible, and we will fully support that. If they're saying, you know, I really want as much pain control as possible without making me sleepy or groggy, then, you know, we'll make sure that they have all the medications available to control their pain. I know there can be a lot of controversy as patients are really approaching the end of their life about whether drugs like morphine are accelerating patients towards the end of their life. But really, we're not using any more medication than the patient needs to treat that symptom. And unfortunately, at those later stage hours, days of illness, you know, patients are suffering and we need to do something to relieve that.
Dr. Katie Adams is with us on this Medical Monday. Palliative care. Dr. Adams is Chief of Palliative Medicine at St. Peter's Hospital. And the number is 800-348-2551. Sue in Ballston Lake. Sue, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. This is a very timely show for me. I just placed my dad in a long-term facility with bladder cancer and really would like to get him involved in your care and services. The skilled care facility is associated with St. Peter's. Do I need a social worker referral or doctor's order? How do I get the process started?
Good question, Sue. Unfortunately, across the country, palliative care is really kind of robust in the hospital setting, but only really starting to spread outside of the hospital setting. So there's unfortunately few nursing homes offering specialty level palliative care, but there's also what we call primary palliative care, which is nurses and social workers who may have done a course or done a little bit of training or have extra skill in these communication processes and might be able to help make sure questions are answered and communication is happening appropriately. And the social worker there might be a good place to start.
Sue.
Oh, okay. So you don't do skilled nursing home facilities?
There aren't any palliative care services available in our area, as far as I'm aware of, unfortunately.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Okay. That's all right. It just sounds wonderful. I would have liked to have you on board, but I'm sure we can figure out how the facility manages that process, because he's not terminal and ready for hospice, but he needs the process. And just to add a comment to some of the call-in people, that ideally he would have loved to die at home. However, his medical care management requires that oversight. and trying to manage that at home, he was frightened. So he wanted to be someplace where he could get comprehensive medical care needs met. Just so everyone's different, and I just thought I'd throw that in. Some people don't want to die at home. Some feel more comfortable in a facility. So just a personal opinion from his perspective. And thank you so much for the show. It's very informative.
Thanks, Sue. Appreciate the call. There are so many doctors at St. Peter's Health Partners. It is a vast network. What special qualities are you looking for members of your palliative care team?
Good question. So we are looking for people who are really good at communicating to begin with, really good listeners. In addition, they get additional specialty level in communication, but we're coordinating constantly among all different people, spending a lot of time listening, communicating, and for the providers, really comfortable learning new skills, managing very severe symptoms, which might require using high doses of pain medication.
What specific new skills? I mean, doctors are pretty skilled. What specific skills would be necessary for what you do?
Taking a good evaluation of symptoms, doing a lot of math to do those pain medication conversions.
Math. All right. Well, that's why, you know, some of us are not in the medical field. Joel in Blooming Grove. Joel, you're on.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. You just used the word communication and how important communication is with your team, between the team, the doctors, the nurses, and the patient. Do you ever use the word death with the patient, or do you speak only in euphemisms like going on a journey and a pain process? Do you discourage the use of the word death when you're talking to your patient? I'll hang up and listen on the phone.
Joel, that's actually a great
listen
question.
On the radio, I mean.
Thanks, Joel. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think that's part of why our team communicates so well is we don't use euphemisms.
Straight up.
We straight up tell patients, if they want to know, first we will ask if they want to know how much they want to know. And if they do want to know, you know, we'll tell them that they're dying, and we'll even give them an estimate of how much time we think they have, knowing that it's just our best guess.
And if they don't want to know, you do not tell them. That's interesting. Who would not want to know?
You know, some people culturally, they want that information shared with other people. Some people, it causes them a lot of anxiety, and they really would rather someone else in their family make those decisions, someone who they trust. And so we want to make sure people are prepared for that information if we're going to give it to them.
Well, Joel, thank you. That was a great call. Now let's go to Linda in Cobleskill. Linda, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Adams. I'm currently taking care of my mother, who is in the Choices program of Helios Care.
Okay.
Okay. And her meds are given to her by her GP, but they've never been prescribed by anybody else. And I had a hard time getting a GP because she's out of the area. Her GP is hours away. Her hemoglobin's down to 9, and in the past, she's always taken Procrit for it. And I think it would make her feel better. She's feeling quite weak. But her GP won't prescribe it because she said she should use iron. But we're dealing with GI issues and narcotic-induced constipation. I called her oncologist, who has given her Procrit many, many times in the past after chemotherapy and radiation therapy. But she says she can't prescribe it because she can't prescribe drugs when someone is already in hospice. But I'm trying to explain that the Choices program is not hospice, it's palliative care. So I feel like I'm stuck in this gray area of trying to get my mother what she needs. Do you have any suggestions?
Wow, Linda, that sounds like a really challenging situation. And it sounds like really what you're just trying to do is make mom feel better.
Right.
I don't know that I have any specific suggestions for your situation, but it sounds like more communication among the providers and the team involved might help you get closer to a solution.
It seems like I have a problem as to who wants to take responsibility for prescribing this type of drug. And I've seen it before with others, And there's this, I have HCR that comes to my house. The nurses come once or twice a week to take care of wound care for her. And they're wonderful. I mean, everybody we've had is just terrific. But I'm really finding this difficult to navigate to get the medications that I need, because I came right out and asked hospice if she was in full-blown hospice beyond the palliative care, they would not prescribe Procrit. So I don't know where to go from this. I don't know. Do I call Medicare? Do I'm at a loss, and I usually can navigate the system pretty well.
Yeah, it sounds like you're a really strong advocate for your mom, and this sounds like a really difficult situation. I think just, maybe trying to communicate more with the teams who are prescribing, make sure that they're getting all the accurate information.
All right, Linda, thank you very much. Only a couple of minutes left here with Dr. Katie Adams of St. Peter's Health Partners. We go to our friend Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Jim, you're on.
Yay, Ray.
Hello.
Hello, yay, Ray, and hello, Dr. Adams. Yes, I was calling to inquire what would the effect be when a person, male, mid-late 30s, probably is morbidly obese at this stage, really, OD'd and was given the meloxicam, whatever, but his heart was stopped anyway before they even got there, I guess. But they shocked him three times. He finally came around. And he OD'd again a couple of weeks later. I don't know how many times he was shocked that time. But what kind of an effect would that have on a person's heart and other vital organs, these shock treatments?
Wow, Jim, that's a little off topic. Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah,
if you want to take a stab at this.
It's hard to say. That sounds like a very specific scenario. I think when we're talking about decisions about whether to have something that sounds a little bit like CPR, we're really talking about that in the context of a serious illness, which has specific risks and benefits based on where somebody is in their illness.
All right, Jim, I'm sorry to cut it short here, but we are just about out of time. That's a good one, though, maybe for another episode of Medical Monday. Dr. Katie Adams, we only have about 30 seconds left, and I'm sure there are things that I didn't bring up and our listeners didn't bring up. Is there something vital that we need to know about palliative care before we wrap it today?
I think just being open-minded to it, because I think a lot of people not knowing what it is are worried about what it means if their doctor recommends palliative care. So hopefully this conversation has helped open that up. And also really the importance of having that conversation with your loved ones about what their wishes are, helping them complete a healthcare proxy and what they would want in the event of an accident or a serious illness so you can be prepared.
Well, you do good work. Thank you for being with us on the show today.
Thank you.
Dr. Katie Adams with us on Medical Monday. Support comes from MVP Healthcare, providing Medicare Advantage plans, including prescription drug coverage, throughout New York and Vermont. Information available at MVPMedicare.com. Once again, thanks to Dr. Katie Adams for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Terrific calls, terrific questions, terrific emails. Appreciated. Thanks to Zach Malloy. Always appreciated. He's our engineer. Phone screened on Monday by the ever-appreciated Joe Makowitz. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the program, we look skyward. We welcome back astronomers Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.